legacy. Imani Sawari speaking to us from Seattle, Washington, Prison Strike spokesperson. And Cole Dorsey was on the inside, now on the outside, one of the Prison Strike organizers. He's speaking to us from Oakland, California. And, of course, we'll continue to cover this strike that's expected to go on until September 9th. That does it for our show. We have a job opening for a broadcast engineer full-time. Find out more at democracynow.org and apply. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next, Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show asks, how can we fix things, and take your calls.
Tune in on Thursday, August 31st at 8 p.m. to celebrate the queer programmers and the queer community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Emma Lugo of Transpositive will host this special on-air program. You can join us that night at the Queer Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 31st. More information about the Queer Community Open House and anniversary programming is available at kboo.fm.
Hi, this is Bob Madoff. Did you know that almost a quarter of Oregon's children are food insecure? That means they don't have access to affordable, nutritious food. Join me for episode 2 of Local Folks Podcast and experience distribution data. The time when hard-working gleaners, compassionate, low-income local folks, share the food they have gathered with households in need. You can find local folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcasts, web only, and click on local folks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
Good morning from
Good morning.
Deep in the smoke.
Deep
in
the
Portland,
smoke.
Oregon.
Hey, there's no climate change.
No. No, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBO 90.7 FM. It is nasty outside. You know, I was, as soon as recreational pot came to Oregon, I thought this was inevitable. We're going to be smoked in.
What? You're seeing an equivalent between marijuana and this poisonous atmosphere?
No. Walking around in Portland today will not get you high, but it will make you sick.
Yes.
And it's gnarly. You can feel. I can feel it in my back of my throat right now.
Yeah, it's a snotty thing.
Yeah, it is. The American West is on fire.
Yes.
No big surprise.
Yes.
This is the new normal. Remember how last year this happened, too?
Yeah, but it wasn't as bad as this.
No, it wasn't. Well, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And these fires aren't even from nearby. This is from Eastern Washington and from
Canada.
British Columbia. Yeah. But it seems for the last several years running, big swaths of the American West have gone up in flames every single summer.
There's no climate warming.
No, this is pretty much the new normal.
Yes, it is.
Or as I heard one firefighter say on the radio a few weeks back, he said he gets frustrated with that because he believes we haven't even seen the new normal yet.
No, not yet.
Not yet. So, we're burning up. That's number one.
But it makes a very pretty sun. Very pretty sun.
Yeah, well, it's not worth it.
Orange sun. Nice.
Yeah. Also, the plight of working people continues to deteriorate in the United States and in much of the world, it must be said.
Yeah, that's absolutely statistically correct.
Yeah, it's absolutely statistically correct. Thirdly, the President of the United States is still a moron.
Well,
he's still in office.
Better yet, he's a crazy moron.
It's a very stable genius.
Yes.
Joe, very stable genius.
Right.
We see this is the culmination of several trends that we've seen happening, unfolding here for decades, many of which we have tracked on this show for a number of years.
Right.
It's very easy to look around at the world and say, forget it.
What do you mean, forget it? Don't you have children? You have children?
I do.
You can't forget it.
It's easy to despair. I know that I can't forget it because I got children.
Remember the Catholic sin.
That's Catholic sin. Funny you brought that up, but I don't even want to go there
tonight. Oh, no, not yet.
It's really easy to look around and despair. It's really easy to look around and say, there's nothing that we can do. The historical forces arrayed against us are simply too powerful. There is a sense of inevitability about global capitalism, a sense that we are past the point of no return with regard to climate change, the sense that even this idiot in the White House may somehow be able to immunize himself from the consequences of his bad acts.
Right.
It's very easy to look around in despair.
Right. I got to tell people that they should call us and talk to us and maybe make us feel better at 231-8187 or worse.
Or, yeah. Yes. And if you want to take part in the conversation online, you can do that. Facebook.com/Abe and Joe or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Yeah, man. Things are tough all around.
Well, and sad. I want to throw a sad thing in.
You want to throw a sad?
One of my mentors in New York when I was going to Columbia and I was doing organizing in the peace movement, War Resisters League specifically, who paid me a subsistence of $20 a week. Anyway, one of those people was a guy I met first at Reed, and then I went to see him in New York and I got a job with them, which was the War Resisters League, was David McReynolds. Mm-hmm. And a very wonderful man. Who actually, his last major political action was to run for president on the socialist ticket in New York, not expecting, of course, to get anywhere in terms of winning something, but to put ideas out. And he did a very good job of that. He was one of the people who organized the draft card burnings during the Vietnam War. He was very active with people, including Bayard Rustin and Dorothy Day, and all the people who I regard as heroes of the nonviolent movement, and who very much influenced my thinking about nonviolence.
Huh.
So I just want to give him a shout out.
Okay. Where were we?
We were in disaster land.
All right, things are going to hell.
Disaster land.
Yeah, and the list goes on and on. We have Nazis walking through the streets of Portland.
Yeah. That's creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. We have leftists who turn out ready to fight with the Nazis.
Yeah, you and I may disagree about what to do about that.
I'm not entirely sure where I come down on that, actually. We may need to talk it out. Well, maybe to air it out on the radio.
I think we need to air it out on the radio, but I also think we need to form a united front against fascism. And that's probably the primary thing that I'm concerned with at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So what do you do? What do you do if you look around at the world and are tempted by the sin of despair? What do you do?
Well, you organize.
Yeah, how do you do that?
You dare to struggle, you dare to win.
You dare to struggle, you dare to win.
It's an existential problem. It's not a political problem. If you're not doing the best you can do to make things better, whether or not that has effect, or even whether or not you're doing it in the strategically best way, you're wrong. To lie down and suck your thumb to make your life a little private heaven is not a good response to the enormous danger and horror of what's going on in the world. You got to get out there.
Yeah, you should, you know, keep partying before the house burns down.
Well, no, it's not. Really? Partying's fine, but you should be marching.
You shouldn't just keep drinking till the keg is dry.
You should be kumbalai. No. Kumbalai?
Kumbalai, I don't know.
Yeah. You should be doing things to make the world a better place, even though there's no real reason to think that what you're doing is going to be effective.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a moment.
Okay.
Not just because I find the devil a fascinating character, but that's another story. Okay, so you're saying organize.
Do you know he has an iron penis?
No.
That really stopped you, didn't it?
Forgive me.
No, yeah. That's a medieval idea.
Listeners, if you could see my face right now, it would just
be... Sorry.
I was dumbfounded.
Sorry to bring it up. Bring it up.
All right.
All right.
Metallic demonic phalluses aside... So you're saying organize, get out there in the street. Does that really make a difference? Who cares?
Well, let's look at the history to answer that. The civil rights movement, the modern civil rights movement, when it started, people say, hey, you know, I remember I was a window display designer at Myron Frank, of all things. And I remember most of the guys there were from the South and pretty not elitist, but for no good reason. And they were all saying things like, the South will never change. Well, that's not the decider of whether or not you should take action. In fact, this was in the early 60s, pardon me. And in fact, change did come. And in fact, there have been improvements. And in fact, there are opportunities. And in fact, things are, for many people, much better now than they were then. So what was done, what Martin Luther King did and what others did in different situations, even my friend Stokely Carmichael, with whom I often disagreed, even they did things which were important and which made a difference in the consciousness of the country. So the answer is, yeah, you do stuff, and you never know. You never know where the tipping point is, or even if there's going to be a tipping point in your lifetime.
Yes, okay.
That's an existential statement.
Sure. All right, let's say I'm one of the Koch brothers, and I've got bazillions of dollars.
Okay.
And I'm passing...
You wouldn't be here if you were
a Koch brother. No, I wouldn't. But this is hypothetical here.
Okay.
I'm still advocating for the devil.
Okay. The guy with the steel...
Yeah. Okay. And you're handing out fistfuls of cash to conservative candidates and conservative causes left and right.
Yeah.
Okay? And so why, if I'm a Koch brother, should I see a demonstration and give a damn? What can they do to me? I'm untouchable. I have bought and paid for the machinery of government. Why should I care if I'm a rich and powerful conservative?
Well, we know that they do. The question is, why should they? I don't know. Uneasy is the head that wears the crown. The fact of the matter is that they're still using the techniques of fascism to silence the opposition. The fact of the matter is they are still afraid of some kind of a change which would bring about social democracy.
What are the techniques of fascism?
Labeling putting outside the realm of the normal those who object to what you believe in is one of the primary devices. Using outlier groups to do violence for your cause with your deniability of it. Finding ways to elect people like Donald Trump. These are just a few. I mean, there's many. I can list them endlessly. Supporting a military-industrial complex which is beyond all belief strong, and then supporting the idea of creating new kinds of nuclear weapons to make war possible with nuclear weapons. These are things that are being done right now.
Hmm. All right, so you mentioned the nonviolent resistance movements of the 1960s and how they were able to effectively change consciousness on a large scale. So going back to what you might call the start of the modern protest era.
Well, let me just say, Cable is here because of those movements.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
It's not here because there was a vacuum on the air for Lebanese music? Or
no, I don't think so, unfortunately. No?
Okay. So if you look back to what might be called the start of the modern protest era, I'm talking about the WTO protests in Seattle.
Right.
In 1999. Now, I wasn't around for those demonstrations in the 60s that you're recalling.
No, because I'm an old guy.
Right, right. Yeah. But I recall after the WTO protests, there was a big divide in public opinion, even among people who were nominally leftists. I heard people saying, agreeing with the protesters, foretelling the evils of the consolidation of wealth, the dangers of globalization, the impending threat to the environment that globalization exacerbates. I heard all of these things, but I also heard people denouncing tactics, saying, oh, well, those people are just a bunch of rabble-rousers. They're never going to do anything. In fact, those protesters make me embarrassed to align myself with them ideologically. So I'm wondering when did this come along? When did this transition happen? When did it become somehow off-putting or uncool or irrelevant to be a protester?
Well, I'm not sure that it is. I mean, look at the million women who were out there on the day after Trump got inaugurated.
Yeah, there's that.
I mean,
yeah.
People are putting up resistance, and they're doing it relatively spontaneously.
Hmm.
And I think,
but what I'm wondering is that again, I didn't live through these events in the '60s. Is there a fundamental difference in environment and in atmosphere today
in the movement? You mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. First of all, I can't claim any kind of leadership or super knowledge of what's going on.
Right.
I'm just a citizen, and I'm not super active in these things. And you know, I don't have the ability or the organizational energy that I once had. But I'll show up for a May Day march. I'll show up for various and sundry things. there are better and worser ways to do these things, but to do something is more important than to do nothing. I used to be, and this until a few weeks ago, I was, you know, giving hell to the Black Bloc and giving hell to the Antifas and so on. Mm-hmm. My position now is, look, I may not want to be one of them. I may not like their tactics. I may see the inherently dangerous things in their attitudes, but they are the people with whom we must unite and work together to make social change. And is social change possible? Well, rationally, never. On the other hand, look, I, as I said, when I was working in the display business, I had all these guys saying, hey, the South will never change. Well, it did. And the fact of the matter is history is unpredictable, and history often offers opportunities for improvement or for change that can be very positive. Now, looking around us right now at the dark, dark times in which we live, it just seems helpless. But I'm not willing to abandon the world because I have family, I have children, and children have children, and it's just impossible for me to walk away.
I agree with you. I'm not really willing to abandon the world either for the same reasons that you just iterated. But here's where I'm coming from. In the 1960s, you had large-scale mass movements advancing a number of causes. What were the results of those mass movements? Well, the passage of the Civil Rights Act, of the Voting Rights Act, the eventual end of the Vietnam War.
Although I think the Vietnam War ended because the Vietnamese defeated us, actually.
Yeah, well, there's that also. but there was also public opinion began to tilt overwhelmingly against the war.
Oh, yeah.
And that was due in large part because of the movement rose up against it.
And in more recent times, the lies told by the Bush administration to justify the wars in the Middle East.
Yeah, certainly. But I want to contrast those movements with what happened in the 60s. So I would say the mass movements of the 60s were largely successful, whereas the resistance now, I think, has been markedly less successful, and I attribute this to the consolidation of power that the global capitalist ruling class has been able to enact. Consider, in the run-up to the Iraq War, there were protests all over the place, big cities across the country, across the world. In fact, shortly before the war started, I believe there were the single biggest day of protest in human history happened. But the war went on. The WTO protests, global capitalism continued its consolidation, continued its growth. What have modern protest movements achieved? Where is that fundamental shift in consciousness?
First of all, I want to make something clear. One can never know, and I said this earlier, where the tipping point is, or even if there is, in fact, a tipping point, a place where change takes place. One has to, morally, take action, try to figure out what activities are the most effective and will be the most likely to bring about that change. It doesn't mean you're going to be successful. It doesn't mean that you should not try. This is a moral question as well as a political question. Now, arguments about tactics are fine within the organizations, and we can all disagree. We can have separate demonstrations. We can do all kinds of things. But in fact, we all need to understand a brotherhood and sisterhood united against disaster. And that is something we all need to participate in, because to ignore that is essentially to throw up our hands and say humanity is doomed.
I'm not contesting any of that. I agree with you completely. What I believe, though, is that tactical conversation that you just mentioned, that's imperative. Because I think, writ large, the tactics of resistance since the late 1990s have not been very successful.
Well, what do you mean by successful?
Well, I mean, have we slowed the growth of global capitalism? Have we managed to significantly improve conditions for workers here and around the world?
Well, wait a minute. Now, none of that has... All of that has gone on and on and on. And that is a product of the enormous successfulness of capitalism as an economic delivery system for the ruling class, and a system which also used to be able to buy off the working class. Now I'm not so sure they can do that, because wages are, even though jobs are increasing, wages are decreasing.
Secondly, the environmental movement. I think we've made some progress on the margins, but we're nowhere clear to arresting the growth of CO2 particles in the atmosphere.
True.
We were unable to stop the war in Iraq. We're probably not going to be able to stop Trump's war, whatever it happens to be.
Well, he's going to probably have a war when he gets cornered enough.
Uh-huh. We're having a huge, long overdue conversation right now, and here's where I'll give modern protest movements some credit, around things like gender and race and class. Brown people are still being shot by police all over the place, largely with no accountability.
Right, and in fact, the horrors of separating children from their parents and all of this stuff.
Indeed.
Highly racist, highly charged, highly ugly. That's all happening.
And people who, if not outright racists and fascists, are at least sympathetic to racism and fascism, control all three branches of government at the national level.
Right now.
Right now. So I'm saying this tactical conversation needs to happen. We've got to figure out a more effective means of resistance.
Well, we also have to acknowledge history. We have to recognize the nation was formed by very wealthy white men. You know, George Washington was not a street fighter. George Washington was, and Thomas Jefferson, they were not street fighters. They were slaveholders. They wanted a Republican government. They to accommodate the South. They totally rolled over on the question of slavery. The destruction of Native American cultures was a given. All of these things are real. Now there's challenges to these things and actual changes in law. These are progressive things, but the argument that any good Marxist would have to make is that capitalism does work. And I've said this a lot of times, and people get really angry at me. Capitalism delivers the goods, and that's a crucial reality.
Literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively, and we have to recognize that, and it's a very compelling thing. I like my 70 million square foot TV set, you know? It's nice.
All right, this is the Abe and Joe Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Karen.
Oh, good morning, Abe and Joe.
Good morning.
It's nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
So I wanted to say essentially that I know it appears, Abe, that you're playing devil's advocate, but I'm going to agree with Joe on this. The Talmud, which was put together somewhere 500 BCE, 200 BCE in that period, says that despite the enormity of the world's suffering, we're not free to do nothing. So in other words, we have to do something, despite how overwhelming it was, and it is. And that was true then, and it's true now. I also have despair, but I keep on struggling because I don't see anything else I can do. And I have family and people I love in children I don't even know whom I love, so, and people. I think that we have to demonstrate not just for this country, but for the world to see. We have to let the world know that other countries, other people, that we do not agree with this president, we do not agree with this administration, we do not agree with this economic system, we do not agree. And we also have to say, I believe, that we are in support, for example, of one cause or one person even. For example, I'm going to go down to ICE today to, they're going to be reading stories of people in Sheridan Prison. And our congregation, Quakers, we're working on helping one refugee get out of prison. His entire family was either murdered or disappeared or imprisoned, and he's an English-speaking person from Cameroon, and we're trying to get him out. We're pledging money for bond, for living expenses, for et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're trying to think of how to work it so that during the 6 months he can't work, he'll have volunteer work. There's so many things to think of just to support one human being, and for me, that gives me hope. Not only do I know his story, and that energizes me to advocate for him and for others. There are 100 men in Sheridan, and of course we know there are something like 11 million undocumented people, and the DACA young people, their status is threatened. The temporary protected status people, their status is threatened. Whatever the cause is that one wants to focus on, whether it's African American, whether it's working towards working class rights, we desperately need to have working class consciousness in this country, or ecology. I mean, the list is long. And here, once again, doing just the simplest things and thinking about the poorest countries and how they're going to be impacted. Sacrifice travel. I mean, we live like gods here. We hop in the airplanes and we're flying up in the air, and our wings are burning now. And I think we have to sacrifice travel. I think we have to use metal straws and be conscious of what we're consuming and how we're consuming it.
So you're saying in big and little ways we need to be aware and we need to
start. Big and little ways, weave it into your entire life and into your entire consciousness. And in this way, even if we save one butterfly, I say to myself sometimes, or even if we help prolong the life of one person in a developing country, we're doing something positive. We're pushing against an enormous set of forces here. And that doesn't mean that we won't have some sort of an overturn in terms of maybe a Bernie Sanders kind of president. I don't know. Or all of our efforts at the local level. Maybe we can only turn things around locally, which a lot of us are pushing at the state level and the city level. We go to the city council meetings. We go to talk to our representatives and so on and so forth. All those things matter. I hope for the human species. Well, you know, the human species is a triumphant species relative to all the others, and I desperately want a life for the children and the young people, but I don't know that that's going to happen. And in the meanwhile, we just have to make things better as best we can. So that's my comment, guys. Thank you so much for being on air and saying what you're saying and doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you. A lot of wisdom there.
Yeah, and see, so there.
Yeah, okay. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. No. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Ryan, good morning.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks again, you guys, for giving this forum for us to be part of and having such great things to say. But I'm really fighting the despair like so many other people. But I find often that I am... let me get my thoughts together here. I am most despairing because of the behavior of the people that I agree with. And I'm trying to figure out how to say this. But I see people that I know, they're conscious of what's going on in the world, conscious of our environmental situation and such, but they don't do those things, the day-to-day, the small things that could make such a big difference. For example, my wife and I for years have been busting our tails trying to... run a small farm growing food sustainably, yet it's so hard to keep people being involved with that because their demand for convenience. And the way I look at it is like we're undermining ourselves as a culture because of our demand for convenience keeps us from doing those things that would support local economies, local food, local businesses, and we're supporting the corporate culture. We're supporting the big corporations, and that's what's happening to our world, is the big corporations are taking more and more power, and we're left with a world like we've got.
Well, what you're saying is true, and the fact of the matter is that capitalism is a ubiquitous and powerful engine driving us toward destruction. And
right, and every day, like, for example, you eat three times a day, and every time you eat, you could be voting with the way that you eat. But even people I know that, they don't do it because life's busy, you got things to do, it's easier to stop by such and such fast food or blah-de-blah. And it's like, if we could just have enough, I mean, I'm not even asking people to have the courage to go out on the front lines and fight the fascists. I'm just saying maybe step up and support some local food. But that seems to be too much of a hurdle for a lot of people. It's like, come on.
Well, remember that this system has developed great skill at entertaining us, at keeping us from consciousness. And it's part and parcel of this American capitalist system. So it is very hard, and it is seemingly impossible to turn it around. What we don't know, what you and I can't know, is where would there be or can there be a tipping point where people suddenly say, this is stupid. We don't know that that will ever happen, but we don't know that it won't happen. We therefore have this existential need to continue the struggle in the hope and the belief that things can change. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to just keep on doing what I've been doing, and I feel like instead of my goal is not to try to tell fascists or right wingers how they could do things better. My goal is to just try to get people that know better to do what they know they should do.
I think that's a good role. I think that's a good role to play. There are many roles to play. There are many things to do. And I think that all of us can figure out stuff to do. And it doesn't have to be our whole life. For some of us, that's possible. For others of us, it cannot be possible. But we can do some things, even if it's just giving money to good people.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. He actually, and the previous caller too, nailed one of the possible answers to our situation that I came up with before and during the show, which is, you know, vote with your choices. Vote with what you eat. Vote with your dollars when you go and buy things. Make sure that your choices that you make in your life don't support the perpetuation of this system.
Which is hard. I have to say, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, you have to be mindful of things that normally you take for granted. And it can be a pain in the butt sometimes.
Yeah.
But it can be done. You buy local organic produce. You plant some vegetables in your backyard.
Right.
You elect to take transit or ride your bike to work. There's all kinds of choices you can make.
There's always walking.
There's always walking. Nah, it's not always walking. But we'll get back to this later. That was an excellent call. We'll take care of a little business, and we'll go back to the phones.
Okay.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio journalist and author Chris Hedges asks...
Yay, Chris!
What are citizens to do when faced with moral imperatives? That sounds like a continuation of our conversation right now.
Odd, that.
Indeed. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio on DMA features two new premiere productions at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Snow in Midsummer and The Way the Mountain Moved. And at 11:30, Art Focus interviews artists, curators, and critics. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
I want to plug membership. I want to plug people supporting this station. Remember, all these years from 1968 on, this station has been plugging away on issues that many of you, most of you probably because you're listening to this show, are supporting. And it is necessary, unfortunately, to put money into that cause. And I hate pledge drive. I try to put a lot of enthusiasm in it and so on. But the fact of the matter is, this is the only way we've figured out that we can make money. We can't go to the big money people and say, hey, give us some money, because they're not interested in what we do.
But KBOO is one of the ways you can vote with your dollars.
Yeah, and it's also kind of fun. We have the best music program. I mean, people ignore this. We have the best music program. The afternoons are filled with great music, and the evenings likewise.
Yep, it's true. John writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, as I've said before, along with Joe's sin of despair, one should keep in mind, quote, it is not incumbent upon you to complete the work, but neither are you at liberty to desist from it.
Right.
A quote he attributes to somebody named Rabbi Tarfon.
I don't know
I don't know who that is either. Let's go back to the phones. Danny, good morning.
Yes, your introductory comments this morning, Abe, really caught my attention, because you think this air quality is bad. You wait till some state that really doesn't give a rat's behind is controlling what goes downwind from them, and you live in that downwind state, you've got a real problem on your hands. So when the previous caller said, let's do the little things, the comment period will be open for 60 days. And I encourage everybody that listens to KBOO to get online, take the effort, and comment.
The comment period for what?
For the air quality issues that Trump is going to announce today to permit states to control pretty much most of their air quality issues, even though we know there are no boundaries between states.
Oh, I see. So this is through the Federal Department of Environmental Protection?
EPA.
The EPA, okay.
Yeah, huh. EPA is set to announce those changes in the Obama era rules today.
Yeah, that's right.
And those rules are going to permit states in large measure to control the permitting processes and other things for the air quality that they transport downwind to other states. That could be you.
Well, what's interesting to me is that a lot of mainstream capital is not interested in destroying the world. They are part of that process, but that's not their goal. What they're willing to do is sacrifice all of us to their profit-making. At the same time, they're not irrational. They're looking for ways to make things, in many ways, better. The fact of the matter is that it's fundamentally a nasty system, and fundamentally we have to fight it. But we also have to recognize the fact that this administration is truly a fascist administration. It isn't like, oh, they're Republican conservatives. They're not Republican conservatives. The conservatism of the Republican Party of my youth is gone. And the fact is that now this crazy situation is unprecedented, and we all have to recognize it as such. It's kind of like, but not the same as the situation in the early 30s in Nazi Germany or pre-Nazi Germany.
Well, my comment was based on tune in, hear what he's saying today and EPA is saying today, comment. One way we can push back is to make sure that we spend the time to do what that earlier caller said. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, well, no, you're absolutely
that's
right.
That's a great suggestion.
I think
public
to
comment.
not participate, to fall again into the sin of despair, to do nothing, and to end up sucking your thumb in the face of horror is just stupid. It's just not just wrong. It's foolish.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
let's see. Who's next? John, good morning.
Good morning. Great show, guys. Really appreciate the topics. And I want to remind people that, hey, this use the democracy we got and vote. And if you're not registered, register now. The way I understand it, you could register if you're going to be turning 18 by November, I think it's 6th. And vote smart. We got free papers all over town. Brain fart here. You got the Mercury, you got all kinds of papers downtown you can pick up free. They all have recommendations, and you can check that out to help you vote for good people. And remember that it's a winner-take-all system. We don't have any second-place voting. And so vote smart. Vote for whoever's got the best chance to beat the fascists, which in my opinion are Republicans. Find common ground with people that may be to the right and are, talk about taxes. Let's talk about taxes with our fellow workers, middle class, et cetera, and how much percentage we're paying versus Trump's big tax cuts. And then talk about the debt that Trump's created and try not to polarize things. I think we could pull people in if we talk facts and common sense. And hey, thanks for letting me blow off.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
we got some smart listeners out there.
Oh, I think we do.
Thank God.
Yeah. I'm not sure all 12 of them. I don't know.
503.
That's my cynicism. Ignore it.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on your listener-supported, community-based radio station, KBOO. Francis is next. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I certainly appreciate KBOO. It's been around, well, let's just put it this way. My eldest child, my daughter, is almost as old as KBOO.
Oh.
I remember when it first began, and I've been a supporter ever since. What I have found when things get really desperate is going outside and talking to real people, riding the MAX train and talking to real, interacting with the world and seeing that there are still marvelous, wonderful, kind people in this world. One of the issues that has been very important to me all my life is the injustices in our criminal justice system. And I, every month, try to attend the vigil for Keaton Otis, who was a friend of my son's, who was murdered by the police. And in the process of attending that vigil, I met some women who have lost their children to police violence. And I don't think there's anything probably more tragic and probably heartbreaking for an individual to have to deal with, is to lose their child, especially to in that manner. And these women have strength that I admire a great deal. And they do not just stop at attending vigils. the grandmother of Quincy Hayes, and another child who was killed over in Clackamas, Irene Kalonji, his mother. They also participate in a group called, well, they have formed a group called Pacific Northwest Family Circle. I attended their annual gathering last weekend at the park. They also are involved with a national organization called Feet to Fire, and that is to hold prosecutors and DAs accountable for their lack of prosecution of murderers and also for their mass incarceration of people. And I just, sometimes you don't think your efforts mean or do anything, but just yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, Governor Cuomo in New York signed the very first ever bill by a state legislature that forms a prosecutorial misconduct commission that will oversee some of the railroading that's done, the mass incarceration, and also the lack of prosecution. And that is quite a success. And I know that that has happened because of people not giving up.
Yeah, that's really an extraordinary measure, isn't it? And it seems long overdue.
Yes, it is.
Let's try and compel the justice system to embody justice.
And I think a large part of that is because Cuomo suddenly has opposition from a bright, famous woman.
I'm not sure who you're referring to.
Yeah, I'm not either.
You're not
a bright, famous woman. I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, who are you talking about, Joe?
Who am I talking about? Cynthia Nixon. Cynthia Nixon.
Oh, the actress?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, she's got a shot, not a heavy shot, but a shot at running for governor. It's pushed Cuomo into much more liberal positions. There's no question about that. So
actually, I don't know that he's not ever not been liberal.
Well, we can discuss that.
The speech
but that's
he made the other day, he got anyone who professes to be liberal to me is not as liberal as they should be. That's just the way I think. You know,
it's like the man who says, "I am the king." No, you're not the king. Yeah, go ahead.
They have to acquiesce too much, you know, just to maintain a position, and that's too bad. But I think that the bottom line to me is that as long as we allow corporations to be considered as people and allow them to proceed with their short-term profits at the expense of people, then I'm hoping, I see this all coming to resolve someday, somehow, when somebody is able to take a case to the Supreme Court and say, I want the same protections that corporations have because they apparently think they have the same that I have. I want the same that they have. And somebody sitting in prison for tax evasion should be able to say, I don't want to be in prison because that corporation is not in prison. And if they say that, well, you're not a corporation, then they can't have it both ways. They can't be a corporation and a person too.
Well, listen, I really appreciate your points and they're valid.
Thank you for the call.
So I want to thank you. I'm glad you called.
Frances is always so rock solid.
Yeah. Good woman.
Chris, you're up next. Good morning.
Chris?
Hello?
Hello, are you there? You're on the air.
Me, am I on the...
You are.
The one?
You are, sir.
Oh, okay. Hey, here's my strategy. You said this has to be strategic and we shouldn't wander off onto all kinds of personal points and everything. So how about this? Let's decide we don't want to be ruled by the rich.
Okay.
What do you think?
It's one thing to decide that, but how do we make it so?
Well, it takes a lot of organizing, right? How did we ever get the vote at all? I mean, how did they decide? Well, I guess they were afraid of the people, I suppose, but how do other countries do it? I say, you know, we just prevent the rich from having an undue influence on our politics, one thing, which Citizens United, of course, is one of the things. But We just have to decide as people that a small, tiny group of rich people shouldn't have all the say. How hard is that to say to your friend? Just go up to your friend and say, hey, I don't think we should be ruled by the rich. What do you think? And just keep doing that until the message gets through.
Well, I would say can't hoit. However, I think that also we need a more detailed analysis, which involves history. We are a nation that suffers from a mythic creation myth, which is not really justified. You know, we ignore the facts of how the compromises were made to create this republic, including the system that created the Electoral College and created no rights for persons
right.
of color
Look,
and
hey,
so on.
Joe, hey, I'm a history major, and I got to get to work.
Like, okay,
I'm
man.
Class guy, so I don't need a long discourse on
But
history.
Some people might.
Yeah. Well, you can, you know, anyway. So have you ever, like, said to someone, I don't think the rich should be ruling? Because we live in a plutocracy, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, I've had variations of that conversation with lots of people. But as I said before, the you know, the big question is, how do you make it so?
Yeah.
Well, you got to decide you don't want it. And it sounds like either of you guys have decided that.
Oh, I've decided that, yeah. Yeah, it's one thing to decide you don't want it. Quite another thing to pry the hands of the rich off the levers of power.
So you don't want to, you do want to live in a plutocracy. Is that what you're saying?
No, that is not what I'm saying.
No?
Yeah,
well,
thank you for asking
so
that
you
clarifying
don't,
question.
So you don't want to live in
a plutocracy. I do not want to live in a plutocracy. Yeah.
Well, not unless I'm the king. I'm being ironic here.
See, you're not even taking it seriously. So
No. So let me be clear. I do take it seriously. I think there's a difference between saying that it should be so and that we understand that it should be so and working constantly and steadily to make it so. And that's why I'm being a little sarcastic, man. I do appreciate it.
You don't think people have worked? You don't think people have worked? You said you know about history. You don't think people have worked to try to make this a democracy and not have plutocracy ruled by the rich? You don't think people have been doing that?
I think people
Isn't
are doing...
Isn't that what the union movement is all about? Why do we want to give workers power, which is what the unions were all about? There's a start. You know? You didn't notice that?
I'm not sure I understand your criticism. Are you saying that we are not honoring the struggles of others in the past? Because that isn't
no,
so.
I'm saying you act like... You just act like there's no opposition. There's never been any opposition.
No, I disagree. I don't think we act like that at all. Have you listened to the show long, or are you a newcomer?
What was the last
I said, have you listened to the show very long? Because if you had, I think you would realize that we've addressed these questions many times.
Well, you haven't addressed them today as a strategy, and you said you have to have a strategy.
It's not a strategy. What you're describing is not a strategy. It's an idea. To have strategy has to do with very specific things that you do. And what you're saying in general is correct. But how to do that is a very difficult question. And
how did people decide they wanted some say at the workplace? They didn't want to just be slaves to the bosses. How did they decide that?
Through desperate and strong organizing, through the sacrifice of many lives, through struggles year after year after year.
That's what we do. We decide we don't want to be ruled by the rich, either at the workplace or in politics or in other institutions. We want a democracy.
Well, first, one of the first things that has to happen is people have to be aware. They have to have knowledge. And one of the things I liked about the IWW historically and recently, by the way, they've had some labor victories here in Portland. The thing I love about the industrial workers of the world is that they were in the business of educating people about the realities of capitalism. And they did it a lot, and they suffered a lot, and they continue to do it. So it's a long, difficult struggle, and we're fighting against enormous power, against the advertising industry,
you keep doing it, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise we wouldn't even have any labor rights at all, right? So someone did it.
Yeah,
so
and I know, hopefully...
That's an anti-plutocracy action.
Right.
Anti-rule by the rich.
I'm not sure what your criticism is exactly. Seriously.
You don't know that 400 families donated half the money to the presidential election?
Yes,
we
know that. We talked about it.
That's
going in circles here.
Thank you for calling.
I'm sorry, we weren't getting anywhere there.
Okay.
All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's next? Michael, good morning.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I was I was interested in Joe was saying what the tactics of fascism were towards the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And he was doing like an incredibly accurate description of the Black Bloc. And then the next thing he said was, but you know what? I've decided not to criticize the Black Bloc. I mean, the Black Bloc, they show up and they don't let speakers speak. They cause property damage.
That's not fascism. That's a dictatorial behavior, and it can be criticized. There's a difference between the actions of the Black Bloc, which in many cases are reprehensible, but in other cases are not so reprehensible. You choose your allies based on the circumstances on which you find yourself. As to the question of fascism itself, fascism is a system largely economic but also political that silences people, that creates centralized power in the hands of a very few, and that is totalitarian. That's not the Black Bloc. It's just not. They may be acting in ways that are violent or inappropriate, but that does not make them fascists. It's an important difference.
You talk about silencing people...
The Black Bloc doesn't silence anybody because it can't. Even if it wanted to, it can't.
How about what happened to Brett Weinstein at Evergreen? How about what happened to the Christakises at Yale? You don't think they were silenced?
I think there's
a large Black Bloc contingent at Yale. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, okay. It's not just the Black Bloc.
Oh.
But these tactics of fascism that you're talking about, I see them happening on the left actually more than I see them happening on the right.
Oh, that's so silly. Come on. The structure of the society is essentially in its direction absolutely to the right and absolutely involving people in absolutely irrelevant and silly activity. The fact of the matter is that it isn't just fascists. That's not the point. And the Black Bloc, which there can be much criticism of, do not and cannot silence resistance. The Black Bloc exists. It can mess something up, a march or whatever, but it is in itself and in its intent very much not fascist. You're mistaking totalitarianism in general for fascism, and I think that's a mistake.
Well, I don't know. I just think that when you talk about silencing people, the main silencing I see going on is from the left.
Come on, man. You watch television ever?
Rarely.
Well, you better watch TV. The fact of the matter is that just about half of it is shows propagandizing for the police and others like that. That's the crux of fascism. It isn't just but people yelling somebody down, although that's wrong behavior. It isn't that. That's a small thing. The big thing is the enormous power of the popular media and others, which are ruled and run in the interests of the ruling class. That's the danger. Not the fact that there's some people who are anarchists and disrupt things.
Well, you know, we can agree on the magnitude of the threats. I mean, we can disagree on the magnitude of the threats we see.
The difference in the magnitude is the question, Michael. That's what Joe is trying to say to you.
Well, what I'm trying to say is we probably could agree on what tactics are acceptable and what tactics aren't. That might be a place where we could agree and get something going that wasn't just limited to a small circle of ideologically like-minded people.
I hear you trying to conflate the shouting down of right-wing perspectives on a college campus. I think that's what you were getting at when you talked about Evergreen and Yale. I think you're trying
that
to...
That is what I'm talking about.
It is what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. You're conflating that with a systemic expression of power like the separation of children at the border by a fascist government authority. They are nowhere near the same thing, not in terms of scale, not in terms of the damage done to people's lives, and not in terms of the corrosive effect on our democracy. It's just night and day, Michael. They're not equivalent, and you're trying to equate them.
Do you know who Justine Sacco is?
No.
Justine Sacco had her life destroyed by a Twitter mob because she made a stupid... because she made a stupid joke on Twitter. She lost her job. No one will hire her. I mean, there are things going on that are just like horrible mob behavior, and a lot of that is happening from the left. And if you want to talk about socially...
Michael, you call periodically, and sometimes you're entertaining, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. The fact of the matter is the things that happen that are injustices that happen on the left are as a teeny weeny little thing in comparison to the overwhelming power and assertion of power by the right in this society, and has always been so. It's, you know, any excess on the left is as nothing compared to the enormous power that's brought to bear to create legitimization for the kind of capitalism we have, and for the fact that we have no social democracy, unlike much of Europe.
I think we're going to move on.
Okay.
And our engineer, Ray, makes the point that Antifa is not the same as Black Bloc. And I think you and I have a tendency to conflate them.
Yeah, and I think that's really accurate. A good point. That's very important.
And what's becoming more and more apparent to me is that I think we're going to need to have some members of Antifa on this show to explain what they're about, to what their tactics are about, what their objectives are, and maybe how they differ from people like the Black Bloc and Protest Past.
And in fact, we should invite somebody from the Black Bloc if they're willing to come.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a very good suggestion. I don't know who that is that we need to reach out to, but they probably sometimes listen to us, and I really think we should welcome
and
them.
I know some members of Rose City Antifa have appeared on other morning talk shows on this station, so I'm going to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another call or two, and then maybe we'll sum up. Harry is next.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. I have a nonviolent tactic that the anti-demonstrators against these fascist demonstrations can use against them. Water balloons.
Water balloons! The deadly weapon of the child.
And lots of fun to boot.
They throw water balloons and the police act up. They can throw water balloons at the police.
You throw a water balloon at the police and they throw a bomb at you. Literally.
Oh.
Remember this. The police have absolute power in many situations. Anything aggressive toward them, it just empowers them. You have to be very careful.
Well, if that happens, this is the tactic number two. Throw feces.
What? No.
I think we're
going to
end it there.
That's enough of that. Okay.
No. They can't endorse that tactic, I'm afraid. The water balloons, maybe, but not the other one.
That's a very dirty idea.
Yeah. Okay, so we've been talking today about how do we contest the sin of despair? What can we do to actually push our society forward in a meaningful way? I've got a few things.
Go for it.
Taken together might help.
Go ahead.
As a caller noted earlier, personal life choices, what you decide to do, what you decide to eat, what you purchase, how you get from place to place. All of these things matter. And when millions of people make small changes in their individual decisions, it adds up. It's one way to collectively hit the ruling class in the pocketbook.
I agree.
And that's one of the best ways to get their attention. Secondly, local governance. It's a lot easier to push back on the forces of global capitalism at the local level than it is at the national level. And we have an opportunity in a city council race this election to make exactly that kind of choice, I think. Thirdly, and Francis mentioned this, engage with your neighbors. There's wonderful, intelligent, vivacious people who live all around you every day.
And break down the barriers between your neighbors.
Yeah, precisely. Hold a neighborhood cookout.
Build community.
Yeah, but look up from your screen for a little while and talk to the person across from you on the bus. You know, these people are in the same boat. We are all in the same boat. So it's good idea to meet your shipmates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Next step, make political noise. You march, you demonstrate, you write, you make phone calls, and above all, you vote. And if you know people out there who don't vote, get them to vote.
It's really, this is the election. This coming congressional election and state and local elections are incredibly important. If we can turn things around a little bit, just a little bit, the facade of this fascism that's created by Trump and the very rich will fade from sight.
Right. And make no mistake, there is an organized effort to keep people from voting going on all over this country. We have it better here than most in Oregon. But we hear story after story every day about people finding out that their name had somehow been culled from the list of registered voters in their precincts. This is happening, and it's happening disproportionately, surprise, to people of color.
And you got more?
I got one more thing.
One more thing.
Make a joyful noise. Sing and dance, make music, make art, write poems. Give people a hug.
Why not? Hey, it's been fun talking to you all. We hope you appreciate the program. We hope you appreciate KBOO, Best in Music and Public Affairs. You stay tuned and learn a lot.
We'll be back at you next week. From the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, journalist and author Chris Hedges asks, what are citizens to do when facing a moral imperative? At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Stage and Studio, DMA features two new premiere productions at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Snow in Midsummer and The Way the Mountain Moved. And at 11:30, Art Focus interviews artists, curators, and critics. Today in Portland, we'll see a partly cloudy and smoky day with an afternoon high of about 95. Air quality is unhealthy, and people are advised to reduce long or intense outdoor activities. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the August OMSI After Dark, featuring Insexuality, Ultrasonic Love Songs, and Death Dances from the Panamanian Rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at OMSI in Portland. What does the world sound like to an insect or a bat? You can find out by exploring the insect music you've never heard before in surround sound under